live from the WCPT 820 studios in Chicago, Illinois. This is the Ben Jarofsky Show. In our third and final hour of the program, it's the long-awaited return of our dear friend, Mr. Pike, David Glowatz. And now your host, Chicago Reader columnist, Ben Jarofsky.
Yes, indeed. Mr. Pike, Dave Glowatz is in the studio. Independent journalist Dave Glowatz reports on local government at shygov.com. He's also Mr. Bike, a bicycling instructor and author of the best-selling paperback, Urban Bikers, Tricks and Tips. He probably rode his bike here in the cold, which makes him different than me because I don't ride my bike when it's cold out. Do you ride your bike, D?
Not when it's cold. Well, I tried one time and I hit a wicked pothole. It turns out those are a lot more damaging when it's freezing out, so my tire bent.
By the way, no more plunger jokes, no more toilet jokes about J.B. Pritzker. The campaign is over. Now you got to make horse farm jokes, right, D?
Oh, yeah, because J.B. Pritzker bought a $12 million horse farm right after he won the election in Florida.
Yes, he did. He bought that $12 million, or I think it was $12.5 million, but don't quote me on that. Horse farm in Florida. The only person I know with that kind of money is Mr. Bike. Mr. Bike has been known to buy $12 million horse farms in Florida. Isn't that right?
How did you know that?
I don't know.
Segway master.
Who have you been talking to?
Anyway, independent journalist Dave Glowatz reports on local government at shygov.com. He's also Mr. Bike, a bicycling instructor and author of the best-selling paperback Urban Bikers, Tricks and Tips. He shares my utter obsession with all things Lincoln Yards and the TIF deal. I've been talking about that a lot today. I was just talking about it with Jessica Disu, who was in the studio just before you came on.
And I'm a fan of FM Supreme, by the way.
Oh, well, you should mention that to her as she was walking out. But
she bolted. Yeah,
yeah, she was in a hurry to get somewhere. But we were talking about the consequences that come when government spends its dollars on things like the Lincoln Yard development as opposed to mental health clinics and schools, etc. Of course, Mayor Rahm and Mayor Daley before him wanted the authority to divert tens of millions of dollars of property tax dollars away from public institutions like schools and clinics and police and fire, etc., into the TIF slush fund so that they could spend it on pet projects like Lincoln Yards development deal.
Now, technically, Ben, those funds are not diverted away from the things you named, the schools and parks, etc., because as the Department of Planning officials will point out, all those agencies get their full tax levy when they ask for it.
Yes,
what happens is the people in the TIF districts don't contribute as much as they would otherwise, so everybody else has to pay more.
Yes, that is true. But also, as I've pointed out many times, if the TIFs did not exist, those monies would go to the taxing bodies and they would have more money to spend because the whole purpose of the TIF program is to increase the amount of money that feeds these taxing bodies like the schools, the parks, etc. That's why you create the TIF district in the first place, because you use the TIF monies to seed development that will increase the tax base that these entities get. And as soon as you've finished off the project that's increased the tax base, you're supposed to get rid of the TIF, and all of that money would flow in to the schools, etc.
There are some mayoral candidates who are espousing that very thing.
And I've been espousing it for many, many years, but they don't do them. They keep those TIF districts around for 23 years. Why? Because they want that money flowing in.
23 minimum.
23 years minimum. Yeah, absolutely. All right, but so before, we've already started the deep dive, and I said before we start the deep dive.
We just can't help ourselves.
No, we cannot help ourselves. All right, Dave Glowatz, you did ride your bike here. Where's your bell, by the way? You're supposed to bring your bell.
I had a little mishap parking my bike. I was a little late, so I didn't take my bell off.
Oh, okay. I hope everything's okay. So just get that first biking question out. Is it safe to ride your bike when it's this cold in the city of Chicago and this dark so early?
Well, people in the summertime ride in the dark all the time. They might not ride it might be as dark as early. So there's two things that people have to think about when it's cold. One is the extremities tend to get colder than anything else, like hands and feet. So Mr. Bike uses mittens in the winter because it keeps all of the happy family of fingers together nice and warm, just like during the holidays. And at night, anybody biking at night should be using lights, a front headlight and a rear taillight. Rear taillight is not required by law in Illinois or Chicago, but Mr. Bike recommends it for riding in the dark. And wearing black in the dark is something that's sadly common, and people shouldn't do it.
Yeah, you should definitely not do it. I just think there's something psychological about, at least for me, I'm just speaking for myself, in the wintertime when it gets dark so early, so it's dark pretty much like 4:15, 4:30, what have you. It's something psychological about it. It seems, and then it's also colder, so I'm not paying as much attention because I'm so focused on trying to stay warm. I don't think I'm paying as much attention to the cars that are all around me. So there's a psychological impact of riding.
Yeah, this hunching over is a real easy thing to do. I took a yoga for biking class once that a friend of mine did, and she talked about how some people are just so constricted where they're leaned over and they look like they're arthritic because they're so scrunched over, and that people especially do that. I notice myself doing that in the winter. When I first get out there and I haven't warmed up yet, I tighten up all my muscles, and that actually makes it worse for your blood flow. So you have to think a little bit. I have to think about just consciously relaxing when I'm out in the cold like that, but it's not intuitive.
Yes, it's absolutely not intuitive. Anyway, Dave Glowitz is my guest, but we won't be talking biking. We'll be talking TIFFs. Get your pencils, get your paper out. We're going to take the deep dive. We're talking about the Lincoln Yards TIFF project. Dave Glowitz has been reporting a lot on that on shygov.com. And this is becoming a big issue, or is emerging as an issue, I should say, in the mayoral race. Just got a statement here from Toni Preckwinkle. She's calling for delaying approval of the funds, which is pretty important, I think. The current administration has a shameful record on TIFFs. I'm reading, Dave, the statement from mayoral candidate Toni Preckwinkle. The current administration has a shameful record on TIFFs, including diverting funds from our neighborhood schools to downtown luxury development, rushing a vote on the creation of a new $800 million TIFF for the Lincoln Yards mega development fits the pattern. Chicagoans deserve an open and transparent conversation on TIFF reform before the approval of any new TIFF moves forward. I stand with community groups and say, delay the TIFF. That's Toni Preckwinkle's comment on it. Here is Lori Lightfoot. She's also running for mayor in this election. Her comment is, this is about an approach to leadership. We need the next mayor to be someone who shows up, who listens, and who takes community voices into account at every stage of every decision. We cannot continue imposing these massive plans that fundamentally transform the character of our communities, communities where we live, work, and commute every day in a top-down way that prioritizes developers and corporations above people and neighborhoods. And Amara Enya came on the show last week and said she would show up at a city council hearing the day of the vote to voice her opposition if necessary, and maybe even bring, if she could, Chance the Rapper with her, who of course is one of her key allies.
Well, you and I talked not too long ago about the alleged fact, the reported fact, that no TIFF deal that this administration or the previous administration, the mayor of which shall not be named, has never not been approved. In other words, every time the administration has pitched, proposed a tax increment financing district, it has always gone through. So history is against not approving this.
Yes, absolutely. If I had to put money on Vegas, I would say the city council would approve this.
So if it gets to that place where Amara Enya shows up at a city council vote, if, in other words, it's come to the floor, that is the final approval stage,
yes,
of which there are, what, you know, four or five. And if it's gotten to that point, I think the train is pretty much pulling into the station.
Well, yes. And then today, the Community Development Commission, the way this process works,
it was step two.
Yeah. There is a entity called the Community Development Commission, and they are meeting to recommend one way or the other. I do not know what they did today. Did they approve it?
Well, I did a short report on this yesterday, that on their agenda was the introduction of the redevelopment plan prepared by the Department of Planning and Development, the City Department of Planning. And I haven't seen this in too many agendas from the CDC, the Community Development Commission, but they put a special note saying there will be no public comment during this. It is just to accept the report, the commission to accept the report from the staff and schedule the CDC's public meeting.
Gotcha.
So they were making it kind of clear that the public's input would not be sought or welcomed
at this particular meeting.
Yes.
But they have to act. I mean, they have to allow the public to speak on this. And I've gone to so many of these CDC meetings during the Mayor Daley years, and it's essentially a rubber stamp board. They're making a recommendation based on what the planning department, there's sort of an entity of the planning department. The planning director is an automatic member of the commission, and the mayor appoints the commission. So there's about as much independence from this commission as there would be, say, from the mayor's school board. So then they make a recommendation to the city council. So your point is well taken, Dave. By the time it gets to the city council floor, all the engines of city government have been turned on at full blast to approve it. But it's up to the aldermen to make that final vote, and they're the ones who are going to have to go before the public for re-election on this issue. In the past, I think the point you're also making without actually stipulating it, it hasn't been a big public issue. People really don't know enough about the TIF program for them to have it as a major issue in a local election.
Well, here's another point. You talk about, you know, aldermen facing re-election. The Department of Planning, when it held its first public meeting on this tax increment financing district, which is called the Cortland Chicago River Project Redevelopment Project Area, I always get those confused. They showed a schedule for proposed approval of this district by March of 2019. So the last step of that would be city council approval. Possibly then that approval could take place after municipal elections. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that, you know, the aldermen could have already been, like most of them could have already faced election and not have to worry about public backlash if they say vote in favor of this TIF district in March.
Well, my hope is that the more awareness there is, the more it forces the aldermen to come forward and say how they're going to vote. And it's interesting, sort of the evolution of Toni Preckwinkle on this issue. The last time she was on the show, Dave, when I asked her about it, I asked all the mayoral candidates about this. She said she wanted to talk to Brian Hopkins, who's the local alderman in the area where the TIF is located. I have always objected to giving so much authority to the local alderman on a TIF deal, because a TIF is effectively a citywide tax that we all pay, so it's greater than the one local alderman. The one local alderman may want to spend the money in his or her ward. I can understand why he or she would want to do that. But all of us are contributing to the pool. We're all paying more in taxes so that this one local alderman could spend more money. So I really don't care what the local alderman has to say. If you follow what I'm saying,
well,
I think it's a citywide issue.
As I mentioned earlier, we have this issue of everyone having to pay more when there is a TIF district, because those people aren't contributing to the public bodies who levy taxes. They are contributing to the TIF fund for that district.
Absolutely. And so as a result, it should be a citywide issue as opposed to a local issue. You've gone to a couple of the hearings on this, the public hearings that have happened over the last month or 2 months or so. What are some of the objections to this particular TIF that you hear?
I want to distinguish that there are two processes happening in parallel here. One is around the TIF district that we've been talking about, and the other is approval of the Lincoln Yards development. And just for our listeners' benefit, the Lincoln Yards development is a development along the North Branch of the Chicago River, roughly between North Avenue and Webster, just south of Fullerton. In fact, I have a map here that those of you looking online
could see. He's got the best maps,
studio
always.
Audience, let's hear it for Mr. Pike's map.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, they love that. No, it's a good map.
It's if you're looking online, you could see that the TIF district itself is outlined in purple, and then the development itself takes up, I calculated, roughly two-fifths of the square area, roughly 55 acres of the, I think it's 168-acre TIF district. The Lincoln Yards development was promulgated by the developer and the city before the TIF district ever was pitched to the public. And so those processes are happening in parallel. Mm-hmm. But the city and the developer, I believe, want the TIF district to be enacted ASAP, because that will enable the developer to get infrastructure, namely water and sewer, streets, bridges over the river, street lighting, paid for by taxes instead of them having to pay for it themselves.
Right. Absolutely. So if the city pays for this infrastructure development and the developer doesn't have to pay for the infrastructure development, guess what? There's more money for the developer to make when he or she sells the project, when he or she finishes developing the project, rents the project. The less money they spend up front, the more money they can make in the back end. So no matter how you look at it, This is a nice little gift to the developer, Sterling Bay.
So back to your original question, there are two public processes going on. One is to, regardless of whether this development was going on, the Lincoln Yards development, if any TIF district has a series of steps, the first of which is a public meeting where the city presents to the public, here's how we see the TIF district generally. And that happened on November 14th of 2018. 2 weeks later was, I think, a second in a series of public meetings for the developer, Sterling Bay, to present to the public its plans for Lincoln Yards. And at each meeting, the people running the meeting, which were city officials, essentially said, we're not here. At the TIF meeting, they said, we're not here to talk about Lincoln Yards. And at the Lincoln Yards meeting, they said, we're not here to talk about the TIF. But in the minds of the public, they're inextricably linked, and people objected at both meetings to both the TIF because of the impact it has on taxes and the development because of the impact it has on open space, traffic, the sort of scale of these high rises going up in the middle of these largely just two and three story buildings all around it.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, it's more than just the public in which they're inextricably linked. The city is ready to make the argument that but for that TIF, there would be no development. I don't believe that argument. I believe they're making that up. It's fabricated to a large degree, but they're about to make that argument. So it's preposterous, at least from the city's point of view, to have a hearing where you talk about the development without talking about the TIF, or have a meeting where you talk about the TIF without talking about the development, because according to the city, you can't have one without the other.
Well put.
So, folks, the more you take that deep dive into the city's TIF program, the more you're going to want to say, I don't think Chicago is up to having TIFs at all. Steve, before we go back to Dave Glowatz, what else you got for me?
Well, it was our top story locally this afternoon, and it would be great to get our current guest, Mr. Bike, David Glowatz, thoughts on this. Our soon-to-be-retired Chicago treasurer, Kurt Summers, who was appointed treasurer by Mayor Rahm Emanuel in October 14, and who's now running for mayor in 2019. Last night on Twitter, Kurt Summers trashed the guy who appointed him, Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel. It was in response to a tweet from former Obama advisor and Chicago resident David Axelrod. Axelrod was giving Mayor Rahm a little props in the tweet, saying, quote, Rahm Emanuel argues much of Chicago's violence stems from lax gun laws in neighboring states. And Kurt Summers fired back to Axelrod about Mayor Rahm, saying, quote, yeah, he also argued that it stems from a lack of values in our community. Slavery, oppression, Jim Crow, mass incarceration, closing 50 neighborhood schools, closing mental health clinics, covering up the murder of a 17-year-old. But black people in Chicago lack values? A complete 180 from our treasurer. Still no updates as to why Summers put Rahm on blast on Twitter. But since we have these microphones in our faces, and since we're trying to entertain all of you listening, let's speculate, huh? That'd be fun.
Well, I'm curious what happened with Summers, because as soon as he was appointed and he came into office, he essentially went into campaign mode. I don't know if you remember this, Ben. He went on a 77 community area tour. And I'm like, this guy's already running for something, you know? Then he toyed with running for governor, right? And then I thought, well, for sure he's going to run for mayor. And then somebody, it feels like, pulled his plug, sort of like Bridget Gaynor, Cook County Board Commissioner. She was all set to announce. I think what I read was that one of her campaign people defected to another
campaign. You're talking about Bridget Gaynor.
Bridget Gaynor, yeah. So I'm just talking about all the machinations that go on in the background. We can only speculate because these people, you know, they're not talking.
Yeah.
Gaynor, of course, didn't give any indication that I could see that she was upset about her decision not to run. But something's bugging Kurt Summers.
Well, here's the deal about Kurt Summers. And again, Kurt, I'm reaching out to you. I would love for you to come on the show and speak to these issues yourself. Kurt Summers has been a very loyal member of Mayor Rahm's administration. And yet I sense his background is such. He's from Hyde Park, went to Whitney Young. His grandfather, Sam Patch, was an activist, a community activist on the South Side and an ally of Mayor Washington. I sense that there's another side to Kurt Summers. There are people who've told Kurt Summers that, you know, what the mayor is doing is not healthy for the city of Chicago. I do not know this, but I just sense this given his background. And so I think, like many people in the city of Chicago, particularly from the black community, there's this sort of, you know, struggle where you see what the mayor's policies are. Kurt Summers is a very smart guy. He understands the impact of what the mayor did when he closed 50 schools, when he closed those mental health clinics. He knows what it means to take money, TIF money that's supposed to be for poor neighborhoods, and spending overwhelmingly in gentrifying neighborhoods. He knows what the impact would be. So
this sounds like a situation of conscience overcoming ambition.
Maybe so. As I said, I welcome Kurt Summers. Maybe it was just a rash moment where he just had like a Trump-like moment where he just felt he had to respond. But then, of course, he could have taken it off his feet. I don't know. But he raised some very good points. We were talking about them with FM Supreme, with Jessica Disu, right before you came on the show, about the struggle between holding poor communities accountable for the carnage, the murders that take place in those communities, but not holding the larger governments and the people who run the government responsible for the policies they implement. You know what I'm saying? So
What is it that Gore Vidal used to say? He called USA the United States of amnesia because we have so little knowledge of history.
Yeah, we forget it too as soon as it occurs. All right, speaking of amnesia, let's get back to the TIF program, which people seem to want to forget. They want to pretend as though it's not their tax dollars being spent. Now, there's been tremendous opposition voiced at hearings, Dave, in the newspapers to some of the specifics of the Lincoln Yard development deal, but not so much the TIF itself. You've been to the hearings again. What are some of the objections that people are raising to the Lincoln Yard deal?
Well, apropos of what we were just talking about around where have resources been expended in this city and, you know, what are some of the root causes of deprivation and violence in communities, I think it's pretty well accepted that a lack of investment and disinvestment and alienation in many Chicago neighborhoods are at the root of many of the problems in those neighborhoods. So one objection that I heard very strongly at one of the public meetings was simply, why are we building this 5,000-unit, 55-acre development in between two already really well-off neighborhoods, Lincoln Park to the east and Bucktown to the west, when there are plenty of places on the south and west sides where, just like the Obama Presidential Center, having a development dropped in the middle of one of these neighborhoods would totally jumpstart development in one of those places. But we have Northsiders saying, why are you bringing it here where arguably the economic stimulus is not needed?
And what is the response from the developers when that question is asked?
Observation noted.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that is the fundamental question that should be asked before this TIF is approved. I would say that there's more money to be made developing these areas. So that's why the city is spending money to develop areas that are already overdeveloped.
It's much easier to attract retailers, for example, because this development's going to be a mix of residential, commercial, and, you know, retailer and office. And it's much easier to attract retailers who have guaranteed clientele, guaranteed income from people who are well off. I mean, obviously, I mean, if I was a developer making a business case, I'd want to go where the money is.
Absolutely. And by the way, if you spend public dollars to build a project, then perhaps you could offer lower rents that the people who come in because your expenses up front are not as high as they would be if you had to build the infrastructure yourself. We'll be on the hook for that. You talked about the scope of this project. Go into that a little more detail.
Well, the developers have presented detailed drawings, sort of aerial views of what the buildings will look like. And they have buildings as tall as 60 stories along the Chicago River, but they have never released, nor have they filed with the city, as far as I can tell, details around how many buildings will have how many units exactly where. They must know that because they couldn't assemble these drawings that they show to the public anywhere. And as far as I can tell, there is a city-required process when they first started this, the developer, where they must submit what's called a zoning amendment application, which eventually turns into an ordinance in which they must specify all these things. Like, you know, what are the building heights for all the buildings? What is the density in each of these buildings? And as far as I can tell, Sterling Bay has not done that. The application that they filed has all that stuff missing. And that is something that community members are objecting to. It says, you're showing us these sort of general plans, but where are the numbers? Mm-hmm. We would like to see the numbers. And those just haven't been evident.
And another source of objection from locals is that it's too much congestion for the area. There's too much development in the area. And what they would rather see the money spent for, some of the public money spent for, is a park.
So we note from the developer's own presentations that they're planning on up to 5,000 residential units. Now, we don't know how many people that is, right? Because they could be one-bedroom units. So that's at a minimum 5,000 more residents. But if you say half of those are two-bedroom, then that, you know, jumps at another couple thousand. Interestingly, one of the spokespeople for the developer said to a, I believe, a Tribune writer, in talking about what the school needs would be for new school children, the spokesperson said that there would be, according to the developer, only 300 to 400 more students. And I was thinking 5,000 units, 400 more students. I don't know. The math seems a little funky for me on that. So let's put that aside. talking about congestion. The other thing that the developers said that they're planning, because of the number of businesses, both office space and retail, that there'll be up to 25,000 new employees coming in and out of that area. So those two things combined, the residences and the number of people going to work there, makes the locals concerned about the amount of congestion that place will generate.
And so they would like a park to offset it. Now, there's also the issue of the Hideout, much beloved Hideout, at least on my part, the much beloved Hideout. As everybody knows, I do a show once a month there. It's the bar, the nightclub, right in the midst of it all, right across the street from where the fleet facility used to be, where the city of Chicago stored its garbage trucks. The city moved the garbage trucks to the south side, sold that land to the developer Sterling Bay, and now that's part of the zone. That's part of the site where they want to put some of the development.
That's the south end of the development.
Just for clarification,
the developer has a name for each side of this development. The north side of it is called Lincoln Yards North. And guess what the south end is called?
Lincoln Yards South.
That's correct.
Oh, man.
If I had the bell.
Yeah, where's that bell when you need it?
And so the fleet facility is in what will be Lincoln Yards South, just north of the Home Depot that's on North Avenue there.
All right. There's a lot of concern that it would put the Hideout out of business. Talk about the issue of the Hideout here.
The Hideout, for those who haven't been there, is a small bar and music venue that's just east of Elston Avenue, a couple blocks north of North Avenue. It's been there for a few decades. They have music and other entertainment, I think pretty much 7 nights a week. And they have a very loyal following. They have festivals in the summertime where they take over, I think there's a parking lot or something next door. Sterling Bay has announced that in Lincoln Yards South, there's going to be a music and entertainment complex comprising, I think they said, 2 to 3 venues. One, a 20,000 capacity soccer field, which in addition to holding soccer would have concerts just like Soldier Field does. And they have a separate music venue or two. They've said they've made an agreement with Live Nation, which is a music and concert promotions and management company, to run that operation. This would just be literally a few blocks from the Hideout. So naturally, if you're the owner of the Hideout, you're going to be concerned about all of a sudden these major venues just coming a few blocks away. And what would it do to the Hideout's business?
Yeah, and of course, Live Nation, the venues would be abetted by this huge subsidy. So all my libertarian friends must be up in arms that the city would be using its economic power to benefit one musical entity, Live Nation, at the detriment of another musical entity, the much smaller Hideout.
So if I may jump into the libertarian shoes for a minute, taking your cue, if there wasn't the subsidy, then perhaps I, as a libertarian, I'm not a libertarian, but if I were, I could say, well, tough luck, Hideout. You just got to up your game if there happens to be, you know, a competition could open up across the street anytime. You know, that's just capitalism.
Well, it's not just, yeah, go ahead.
But there is the TIF subsidy, which changes the game.
And also, not only that, but the competition that's coming across the street has already been the beneficiary of the city moving the fleet facility to the south side. By the way, they try to tell the south side, guess what, guys? You're getting a fleet facility. Man, they think people on the South Side are so stupid. They go, you're getting the fleet facility. And they didn't tell them that meanwhile, they're taking it from the North Side where they're spending $800 million to build Lincoln Yards. Isn't that funny?
It's pretty wild. So the owners of the Hideout have banded together with owners of other music venues around the city, such as Shubas and Beat Kitchen and some others, I think Subterranean. They put together a coalition to put pressure upon the alderman, Brian Hopkins, in the second ward, and the developer, Sterling Bay, to say, tell us specifically the details of this deal with Live Nation. How many concerts are we talking about? They would just like to know, because those deals haven't been released. We just know the generalities that it'll be, you know, the soccer field plus maybe one or two more venues, and there's a deal with Live Nation, and the rest really isn't specific.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a lot of opposition around that, and I get great delight when I see that, Dave, because you, as well as I, have been talking about TIFs for many, many years and the impact they have on our schools and our property taxes, et cetera. It's hard to get people interested in that subject sometimes. But if you personalize it and talk about the impact of this deal on the Hideout, all of a sudden these hipsters are showing up. My God, I live in a corrupt city. My tax dollars may be using to benefit one entity over another.
Well, it's such a large-scale development that it can't help but touch many aspects of people's lives.
Yeah, very well put. As always, Mr. Bike is a diplomat. We've been talking about the Lincoln Yards TIF deal, the development deal. I'll be talking a lot about this in the coming weeks, folks. I'll be writing about it in the Reader. Very important decision the city of Chicago faces. Do we want to dedicate $800 million to $1 billion for one project in a gentrifying North Side area when we have so many other pressing obligations that we're facing? It's not free money, folks. It's coming out of your pocketbook. Final thoughts, Dave, before I let you go.
Well, if people want to see my reporting on the Lincoln Yards development, they can go to shigov.com, that's shigov.com. And then putting my Mr. Bike helmet back on, I'd like to say to listeners that if they're looking for the perfect holiday gift for the bicycling enthusiast or the novice, bicycling novice in their lives, I recommend my book, Urban Biker's Tricks and Tips. It's got 700 photos and illustrations, and there's something there for everyone, including how to keep your helmet from messing up your head. And it's available at MrBike.com. That's MRBike.com.
All right, very good. Mr. Bike, Dave Glowatz, shygov.com. Thanks for coming in. Thanks for helping us understand that TIF deal.